Hey, this is your host, Bridget Lindahl-Goff, on the Urban Farm Project. And today's guest, we have James Kozlik, and he was the former host of the Permaculture Project. He also was the host of my last show. And for his bio information, you can look at the main webpage, and also for his email contact, it's also on the main page. And today we're going to just have a conversation about stuff that James has come across during his search for information and his radio shows. And one of the topics we're going to be talking about is how to move into a sustainable lifestyle, how to make those changes. So, hi, James, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Bridget. Thanks. Good to be here.
One of the things I like to do on my show is kind of give people a brief history kind of your life and how you've kind of ended up where you're at now and, you know, maybe what kind of pertinent conclusions in your life have led you in this direction.
Well, okay, I'm going to try and keep it short and sweet.
Okay.
Just decided to move out west from hometown Chicago about 36 years ago or so. Got into some ski bumming, living up in the mountains, and went back, got married to my sweetheart, and we moved right out west and lived at about 8,000 feet off-grid. We had one solar panel and built a dome home and then a regular house all off-grid and wood-burning hot tub and just spent about, oh gosh, 8 or 9 years. We worked at a ski area. That shut down, moved us up to Montana. And we lived several years off-grid with two of our other children. We have three children. Each one had an opportunity to live at least 3 or 4 years off, kind of off-grid and sustainable lifestyle. And it was just, it was great because, you know, other people might have thought we were poor, but we didn't feel poor at all. And we, my wife and I, had a herb business for a while with a couple other gals. We got into a lot of plant identification and taught some classes, Park and Rec, at Colorado Springs. We had a retail store. And then, what else? We did a flotation tank business, which was pretty interesting. It definitely dealt with inner psychology work, a lot of that, and relaxation. And then raising the children, we kind of got back into a more, what you might consider a regular or normal lifestyle, you know, working the grind and supporting the family. And now we're reprogramming ourselves to get back into a more of a easier lifestyle, self-sustainable, living off the land, getting rid of all the mortgage payments, et cetera, and all that kind of stuff. We're figuring out ways to get back to that lifestyle of, you can call this a life of Riley or retirement, or living off of the Creator's gift that He gives us on this planet that we don't really have to create. We just have to learn how to use. So there you go. That's my quick bio.
That was fast. It was good too. So well, let's just kind of segue right into the you know, making the changes, moving into the sustainable lifestyle. And when did you like kind of notice that you kind of needed to move more towards that way? That you kind of like maybe, I don't know, I guess probably the economic situation in the U.S. has kind of posed a lot of that questions to us individually.
Yeah, well, I think more than anything, you know, I had the opportunity to live that type of lifestyle years ago, you know, where you didn't have to, I don't know, you know, I call it chasing the money, you know, the more you think you need, the more you have to make, and then, you know, we get stuck in this program that's out there with society where you go from, I read some very interesting thing just the other day about how we've gone from, you start out with a small community, next thing you know it snowballs into a bunch of people, now they got to govern themselves. And And I can see us going backwards into the other thing where it's so much easier to work a sustainable lifestyle with a smaller group of people. And it's basically just helping each other out, helping grow food, build buildings and shelter. So I don't know, I kind of went off on a tangent there, but it's a real conscious effort. All I can say is to go into this self-reliant lifestyle. It's got to be a conscious effort because there's a lot involved. I can recall when I first moved from a big city, Chicago, and then moved up into the mountains off-grid and no neighbors within 3 or 4 miles, that it took us a year to not only physically but psychologically really make a conscious effort towards off-grid lifestyle and living off the land. And even now, you know, it's how our minds adjust to the lifestyle of consumerism, so to speak, you know, thinking, well, you have to pay somebody to always do something and money, you know. And now I'm getting back to, okay, now I'm going to make this simpler. So I'm looking at retirement. And for retirement, there's two ways to go. Keep putting money into the 401k plan or whatever in investments and hope they come out at the end so when you're ready to retire, you don't have to work. Or downsize and be very comfortable in a smaller home, a smaller footprint, and learn how to garden and use the resources that are available. If something breaks, fix it. And you can retire that way, and then you don't have to be chasing the money in order to retire.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. I'm like one of the Americans who kind of was set for life. You know, I had worked my buns olies off for money and had a lot of assets. And like within 48 hours, it was gone. I watched it. I watched my investments go down the drain because companies were involved, you know, supposedly in criminal activity, except for, you know, it took a long time for the Justice Department to really make those decisions while they ruined everybody else's life. Because in some cases, they weren't. And I was always shocked, like, you know, once I came down from that, I grew up ranching and farming. And then once I came down, you know, from falling off the pedestal, you know, you realize like how much everything costs, and it's not even consumerism, you know, for me. For me, it's like just getting like, you know, the roof over my head paid sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not living, you know, like sustainable, you know, you don't have anywhere to actually grow food or, you know, in the urban settings, I wish, you know, in some places it's probably a lot better than here, but I've tried the urban farming here and it just really hasn't taken off because people still really don't see a need. And most people are losing their houses, so why put the money into it, right, and labor?
Mm-hmm.
So the sustainable, you know, lifestyle really, you know, is really going to be the only one that really works. And then to help other people that need to move into it and also educate them later on down the road, you know, when they're seeking out places to go and get instruction on, well, how do I make fermentations, how do we make compost, and what plants can I eat in the forest, kind of stuff. Yeah, so I think it's like, I think sustainable all the way. Totally sustainable all the way. So what are some of the, have you noticed like lately, like some of the thoughts that cross your mind, like, oh, we're in this spot. And then you realize, oh, hey, we're going to have to start thinking about this and winding this down. And sometimes I know, like before I'm getting ready to do something, I start having thoughts and epiphanies, you know, about all these different things that I have to deal with. So has there been anything like that that's crossed your mind recently or lately about, you know, downgrading into your sustainable lifestyle?
All right. Well, there really is, you know, and part of the adjustments I'm making right now is trying to fit in what I do for a living right now, part-time selling real estate, and just being able to live off of that rather than trying to get other things going, whether it's selling something, a solar generator, or building houses and cabins on the side, you know. and it's trying to downsize from that so that I have time to dedicate towards the homestead, towards my wife, my lifestyle, and the homestead. And so it's been a conscious effort and actually doing it and taking the action. Like just today, I called up a guy and said, look, I'm not going to sell any generators for you, but I'll send you a lead. You know, somebody buys one, just give me a little referral fee. That's all I want. I don't want to be out there starting a new business. That's huge for somebody like me who's kind of a fire sign and really go get them. Okay, I'm ready to do this now. That's a huge adjustment for somebody like me to make. To say, I'm not doing that anymore. No, I turned down a couple people that wanted me to build them some small cabins. I, no, don't want to do that. Not over there, you know. And it's really opened up a door for me to focus here on getting our garden. We were doing a major facelift on our homestead here. That's been needing it for a long time. And now I have the time to do that. So, yeah, consciously I've been aware of steps I actually need to take, physically and psychologically in order to focus more on sustainable lifestyle.
Yeah, I'm a fire sign too, and one of my friends always says that you're never happy unless you have multiple balls you're juggling.
Yeah,
there you go. Like, I'm constant, you know. It's like, oh, I don't know how to do that, but you know what? Let me try. What can happen? So it's kind of interesting because basically what you're saying is also too, like, kind of like your economic lifestyle is becoming more sustainable because you're going to be able to sustain like one thing. So that's kind of a really interesting thing, like. Not really how to figure out, like, how to get your economic situation sustainable. But kind of, like, what does that mean? And which, you know, which avenue do you choose? Like, what's going to be more conducive to moving into a full sustainable lifestyle?
Yeah, and that's interesting you mentioned that. Because what I've got going right now, and being in the present moment, it's taken me years to really figure it out and do it, but just trusting the universe that God will provide, the universe will provide with everything I need monetarily by just staying focused on what I'm doing now. And I don't need to chase anything else. Just have that total trust. So it's rather than me thinking that I have to take the action to do it, now it's not me that's really doing it. It's letting the universal forces, you know, or whatever. I instead of chasing after things, I'm letting it come to me. And it took me, you know, 30 years to learn that, to finally trust that. And it's still a work in progress.
And I completely understand, totally.
Mm-hmm. I know we've been in conversation, and we've emailed back and forth before. It's the first time I had a chance to really talk with you, and I know just from our emails, I can tell that you, especially what you've been doing and where you're at right now in your life, it is like, what am I doing? And then you know that, well, I'm doing this for some reason, you're being guided or whatever. Is that true?
Yeah, no, I am. I've really kind of moved in and out of periods of my life where I've had a lot of guidance and not. I studied with a Lakota Sioux medicine woman when I was 23, and when I left that experience, you know, she beat the American out of me. So the white person out of me. And for a long time, I was like, really, like, you know, just, you know, wherever, you know, like if the universe said, pack your stuff up, move in your car and go to Idaho, I would just go there and be like, okay, now what? But there was I was watching a video recently called Enlighten Up about this woman who gets this guy to do this yoga documentary, and they go through and they explore like all different kinds of yoga. They take him to India. And then this guy who had lived there for 30 years takes him to this guru who does a type of more like self-realization yoga, kind of more like, you know, worship to God or Krishna or, you know. And the young guy told the guru, he said, you know, look, I've been doing this physical yoga and I'm still an atheist. You know, I haven't really found God. And the yogi guy said, well, you're not gonna. And the, you know, young white guy was pretty surprised by that. But what he said was it made sense. And like, I bawled my head off for 2 hours because it was so true at that moment. The yogi said, you can cook. Cook is a physical activity, just like the yoga, the physical yoga. You can cook for yourself. You can cook for others. You can cook for God. And you can cook for someone you hate. It's all the same activity. But the difference is what's happening in you while you're doing that cooking for yourself, which could be an act of God, the cooking to for someone else, which is could be an act of God, and then the cooking for God as an act of God or worship. And then, you know, that leads you to realize, like, later on, you're not going to compromise yourself to cook food for someone you hate because you're cooking with resentment, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you can do the physical activity, you know, run at it, chase money, do this, do that. But I think a lot of it has to do with how you manifest it in your reality is based on what's going on at that particular moment inside of you. And is it a worship unto spirit? Is your life like, you know, a open canvas for spirit to paint on? Or do you have you already made your own painting? So I totally get, you know, at this point in life, like, you know, really trying to allow spirit, you know, to take the wheel. And trust no matter what happens is the right and perfect thing, no matter what it is.
No matter what it is, you're just loving what is, you know, in the moment, all as much as you can do. And then you don't have time to create a story of revenge or dislike or I didn't want to do this. Because you're so into the moment, it's just like secondhand. You just keep taking action, keep moving forward, keep moving, doing whatever. It's the next step without even thinking about it. Boy, when you get to that space, it's so beautiful because then you always have love. And so you can hope for something you just like without losing energy ever.
Yeah.
The story, and now you're in the present moment. And loving the cooking. That love goes into the food, and then it goes to friend and hope. And all of a sudden, everybody becomes one.
Yeah, no, I'm in total agreement. So are there any, lately I've had so many friends of mine like emailing me with these amazing like esoteric experiences because a lot of them, of course, like attracts like, so I have a lot of people in my life who are kind of in the same boat where we're all trusting, you know, we all have like esoteric, you know, hands held across the nation.
It's our medicine.
What's that?
It's our medicine.
Yeah.
Everybody that's doing that and are being interconnected through this, energy vortex, it's all our medicine to have that trust and hold each other's hand through it. Which, you know, it gets me into something I'd really like to discuss here, and that's the concept of shared housing. You know, nothing really new, nothing new about it. You know, you have the communities are still out there all over the place. There's people doing shared housing and whatnot, but it fascinates me because it's a whole other way to help each other and support each other if you can get in with the right group of like-minded people.
Yeah, I'm right now, like, one of the things, you know, the big thing that I'm, you know, trying to work on, you know, in my life is just continuing to work on getting, you know, being able to buy land so that multiple people, you know, can live on it. You know, they can bring their talents to it. And right now I'm gaining a lot of interest, not from people that are going to be involved with any of the money. I've already built the nonprofit and everything for the business, for the land.
Mm-hmm.
And but like, for example, there's a friend of mine who, I'm going to say older, but he's not older. I mean, he's a master. He lived on a Hare Krishna. I interviewed him a few times ago, but he was a Hare Krishna. He was in the military, got out of the military, built a Hare Krishna compound, had a guru for like 25 years. They live completely off the grid in West Virginia. He did everything there. And now he's like, you know, close to 70 and he wants to specialize in green. And so I'm like, yeah, you could totally live on my land and, you know, do a green project, you know. And then he wants to have a little place where he can sell his bread too, you know, because he wants to make the green fresh for people to eat right away so that it has nutrition in it.
Yeah.
And then just somebody like that comes onto your land and I mean, they've overseen like 250 people, you know, they know how to work in a community without dominating or controlling and also coming from their own spiritual viewpoint, which is harm none.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting to see like the, you know, really the possibilities of how dynamic, you know, each community and what they create could be.
Yeah, it really is. And it's really interesting to see who comes together and how, you know, you never know who you connect with. And then how that group will form, you know, communication-wise, interpersonal skills and relationships, how those will eventually form from complete strangers, but not total strangers, because maybe, you know, we're on the same wavelength, the same mindset.
Yeah, a friend of mine calls them your soul group. She said you get to a place in your life where you're open enough that you're soul group starts to, you know, come together. And she even believes, because she's got a Native American background, she believes that some of them are animals too. Like horses may have decided to, you know, come here and help you with your land. And so you find the right, you know, horses and animals as well as people.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. I mean, I that's interesting because I think that's where I'm at in my life right now. Is all of a sudden I'm opened up more than I ever have before, you know, over the last 2-3 years, and doing some inner work and who knows? Maybe that I feel like I missed a whole segment of my life by not being involved in a community concept.
What do you think stopped you from doing it?
It could have been fear of self, you know, fear of being able to get along with other people or not feeling like I was worthy enough or good enough or like them or a whole bunch of possibilities there. More than anything, probably just an inner, you know, a fear of being self and acceptance, right? And which is funny, rejection, fear of rejection, that would be it. Which is probably why I ended up in sales about 15 years ago. And I said I never would sell in my life. And sales is learning how to take the rejection and still feel good about yourself. So maybe that was the lesson I had to learn that opened up my, what did you call it, soul?
Soul group.
Soul group, yeah. So now I feel like I'm ready to connect with my soul group.
Huh. Yeah, because I know, I think I found you like 2 years ago on the internet, and we started emailing then.
Yeah,
so this has been a recent development, huh?
Well, I think it has a lot to do with so many years of inner work. I've been I'm fortunate to have a mate, Marion, my wife, that over the years has always been into interpersonal relationships. So she's always pulled me into little workshops or this or that and books and whatnot. And so it's been a constant growth experience for me. And as much as I want to give to a certain concept. And so it just took that much time, and now the time is I'm getting riper and riper to opening up to possibilities and exploring with other people, like-minded people.
Yeah, Yeah, for me, it's the last, let's see, about the time where I lost everything, you know, I had kind of lived by myself. I had always helped in my community and everything else. And I always thought like, oh, I'm really community minded. And then I realized wasn't that community minded because I wasn't really good with living with people. Because I'm always like busy on my little projects. And so my life is based on I project enough energy to get these things done. So I didn't really have a lot of time to be able to, somebody could say, hey, you know, we have this problem, we need to work it out now or need some attention. I didn't really have that kind of a lifestyle because I worked too much, right? And was building too many projects. And then so over the last like 8 years, you know, I've been forced to kind of live out of my car and kind of forced to have to live with a lot of different people, and a lot of different personalities, which has been really a challenging thing, not to lose yourself in it. You know, not to totally surrender because you need a place to be, you know, not to totally compromise yourself, but yeah, to still have boundaries, but still work together, you know, for the common goal or the energy of wherever you're living. And then I also started being forced to work behind the scenes with like CEOs from corporations, trying to help them, you know, like manage their people better and create more of an atmosphere of what their people needed. And then sometimes it was moving their building, you know, different things. And so that's been really helpful for me to really understand what a community is and that a community is a present moment thing. You know, it's like farming. It's a moment to moment situation. And it requires labor to do sustainable community, but it mostly takes you being there in the moment. There as a friend, there as a team player, there as a help to, you know, create resolutions for whatever needs to happen. And mostly, you know, relate and be able to relate in a way of, you know, giving and love and sharing. So those are kind of some of the things that I've lately had to, you know, look back on and see, you know, kind of what the theme has been.
Well, I like what you said there about, you know, it's really opening up to love, sharing, and giving. And so it is amazing how much of the psychology we need to go through, you know, in our inner work that we need to do that's invested towards a successful community or shared housing project or a village or whatever. It's interesting, especially when we don't live with each other, you know, since the community that I'm in here, you know, I've got some really nice relationships, and we work with each other on our psychology, and it's fantastic. But when you don't live with that group all the time, you go to your individual houses and then reconnect, you know, very little in the time of the course of the day. It's a little different than actually living with your mate or with a group of, you know, people to where you're working out the relationship and the ego.
Yeah. Yeah, let me tell you, I've had some very raw and vulnerable moments in the past recently, you know, like, ooh, I don't really like that about myself. Okay, I'll change.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so yeah, no, but it's, I think it's good because also too, I think being able to let go of your ego and move more into, you know, a community dynamic, it's actually a relief once you can kind of start moving through the process of shedding it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a relief, like I don't have to hold that up. I don't have to be the one that's totally responsible anymore, you know? I'm not the one who has to navigate it, and I'm not the one that has to do all the communication, you know? I can let these things go to the people who are best suited in our community, and our community can vote on who they think is best for those particular pieces of it.
And do you feel a sense of relief? Are you feeling relieved if you don't have to be the one that navigates everything?
Yeah, I don't have to be the island anymore trying to build bridges to the mainland. Yeah. So is there any, like, so, like, when you're thinking about your vision of what community lifestyle is. Where does your, you know, thought process go? Because I know that you have some parcels of land for sale that are kind of considered for sustainable community because they're large acreages.
Yeah, in fact, it's interesting because even on my website, I talk about community land trust concept and agricultural land trust and that I would be willing to help put together a small group if get four or five people to buy 160 acres and form a small agricultural community on it, in a land trust of some sort. And trying to keep that small. And it's real interesting because it's somewhat of a dichotomy. I really like the place where I live right now. And so I'm looking at, okay, where's my focus at? In terms of real estate, I would love to be able to do that and assist people in that endeavor. On my home ground, I'm really looking at keeping it small, keeping it simple, finding maybe, you know, a couple people where we can put together maybe a shared housing thing, and it would look more like a situation where maybe rent and, oh, I don't know, to just free up time for each other. So, you know, somebody's always there to take care of the garden if you want to go take a few weeks vacation somewhere, or a month off somewhere, or whatever. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at right now. It starts small. I hooked up with this group in Bozeman that's doing a shared housing concept, mostly for Bozeman there. And that was interesting. I went to one meeting and had a great time at the meeting. Met some really nice people that were just starting this group for a shared housing concept. I'm not sure what I'm doing there, why I even went, because it's 50 miles away from me, but I'm fascinated to see how people have to shift their consciousness and really be true to what they want for their life right now. You know, us, me, myself, whoever I'm with, how we have to be honest with ourselves and fulfill and take care of our own needs first before we can even help anybody else. And that's where I'm at, taking care of my own needs. So I'm identifying my needs, and everything else is going to kind of take care of itself.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, the one thing I've learned from, like, the last 10 years of traveling around and working on, like, a lot of different nonprofit projects that always dealt with, like, environmental, food issues, gardening, done a lot of stays, you know, on communities and stuff, seen a lot of different types of communities. Everybody kind of has their own idea of what their community, you know, should overall be. And one of the things that I keep running up against, and I've had a lot of people come up with funding, but I always get the, what I call the plantation owner, where they want to give you the money to pay for the land, but they don't really want to live sustainable on it, like, you know, on platforms and yurts and stuff. They want to have, like, a mansion built there, and then they want to come and go whenever they feel like it, you know, so that the people mm-hmm. that live there in the community become more like slaves.
That just sounds like what I described. That's interesting that you look at it that way.
Yeah, I don't get shocked about it anymore because for me, because I am on the, you know, non-good economic side, I found that, you know, I get taken advantage quite a bit, like when I go do farming interns and stuff like that, because I guess because I don't have money, they don't really see me as, you know, a big contributor in a community, or, you know. So what I've learned is, like, with the community that I envision is that everybody has the same amount of time, you know, like they put in the same amount of time and effort and labor so that you don't have to give up something that you may be passionate about. You know, say you're an artist. Well, great. You know, get out there and put in your time, like in the gardens or whatever else, or building a shack for us. And then the rest of the time you can spend doing artwork, and we help to create a space for you to be able to do that. Because yeah. I think that's like a really important thing in a community. There shouldn't be some people that are on a lower on a totem pole than other people, because then it becomes, you know, like a dictatorship instead of, I want to help you, you know, be a whole person, a whole individual. And, right. And I want that back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There are a lot of things too.
Go ahead.
There are just a lot of things that I don't really want to give up. You know, I'd hate to, I'm really getting into writing, and I'd really hate to give that up, you know, because yeah. I have to work harder than, you know, other people.
Yep. Well, there, you know, and well, first of all, I must say, I had the opportunity. In fact, my first show was with the Lalaike, I think I'm pronouncing that right, community in Hawaii. And both Mary and I had an opportunity to visit them and spend three nights, I think, or two nights with them, and then and work there. And their whole concept was kind of like that. It was a fees who wanted to become part of the community, you know, to buy, you know, help with the purchase of the land and whatnot. But in essence, once you're there, you work a couple hours a day, and then you're free to do whatever else you want. And then getting back to what you were saying too, how sometimes you feel like you're taken advantage of when somebody comes in with a bunch of money, they're the plantation owner and you're the slave. And when we get back to economy and economics, you know, it's sad that our economy turned out that way, because it isn't blending. That's just the way our economy is. However, we have the ability to say conscious currency is that what you do, even though you come in with no money, has a value. And what the next person in the community does has a value. And all of us have this value that we bring to the table, and we just do our whatever we're skilled at, you know, for the higher, for the greater good of everybody. And now we're working totally with conscious, you can call it conscious currency. So, and that's the ideal way to come into a community with that mindset, as opposed to feeling like, well, I came in here with 50 grand, she came in here with nothing,
yeah.
Therefore, you know, no,
well,
that's not going to
work. You know, I didn't really realize, you know, until I did some farming interns, and mind you, mm-hmm. I am so ecstatic that I did a lot of these farming interns, because at 40, you know, years old, 40, 43, mm-hmm. I was like, you know, I might not be able to carry a full farm by myself. You know, there are a lot of things that could happen, and I don't know if I'm strong enough. And by working on these farms, I totally learned hands down. If I had to, I could run my own land. I could run a farm. I could, you know, do old style horse, you know, where you plow the fields, all of it. So I was pretty happy about that. But, you don't realize, like, the plight of, say, the immigrant worker and being an apprentice. And I'm not saying the government should change the laws. I think it's up to us and our communities on farms to make it fair. But sometimes the apprentices or interns, you know, are treated worse than immigrant workers. I mean, some of them are forced to kind of live in tents, you know, like for a whole year or 2 years in all kinds of different elements. Some of them don't eat enough. Once they get there, they don't really have the money to leave to go somewhere else, so they're kind of stuck. And because of that, you know, they suffer a lot of abuse, because there isn't really a lot of time to communicate on farms. I mean, a lot of farmers get interns and apprentices because they can't really afford real labor. The other thing is, too, is that they don't really have, like, you know, the greatest place to live for people, so they'd have to pay the worker more so that the worker could get housing during the time period that they're doing harvesting and whatever else. So I learned firsthand, like, what it would be like to be an immigrant worker, you know, to barely get anything. And to work, like, at one place I think I was working like 85 hours a week, and that was all hard labor, mostly shoveling. Wow. So for me, you know, like we talk about a lot of this stuff, and I think that the farmer and farms could greatly change through guidance on how to come up with a better term for the people that they need to come to their land, and maybe how to make it a little bit more fair, you know, make it so that the people that are there really, really want to put the effort into it, not just learn what they need to learn and get the F out of there, you know, as fast as possible. Because once you train people, you want to keep them, right? Because it takes a lot of effort to train people or to teach them.
Well, that's, you know, this is pretty cool because one of the thoughts I had in my head, you know, is that, okay, so for affordable housing type concept, so we've got a lot of, you know, misplaced or displaced people from whatever, due to the economy, whatever it is that happened, you know, and so we get a small group that creates this footprint, and I talked about this on the show with one of my shows with I forgot his name now, but he had the tiny houses in Texas, and we're always, now you get this group of people that build their house, whether it's a six frame house or an earth home, whatever it is, and farm the whole, like, learn how, you know, so now you've got a skill to take that model that you just created with a small community and actually go forth and do it again, something that you can actually market and support your small community with and show somebody else how to do it, and then it just keeps snowballing. And I thought that's a pretty interesting concept, you know, to be able to do that. Because then you're creating this model that you can bring forth to people, like the people in the city, you know, the city has gotten so big, and once you're in the city, like, you're taken care of, so to speak. All you're doing is, your survival is to make enough money to put food on the table from wherever it comes from and get shelter, et cetera, et cetera. And if you're out of money, you go to the government and get your food stamps and this and that. So you got all these programs. And so it's taken people away from learning the skills or having the skills to live off of the land. And
well, also, too, like, one of my thoughts that just came through my mind, that's a dog-eat-dog world. So when you come onto a community, you have to want to see the other person succeed. I mean, that's spirituality 101. I'll never succeed unless I have a desire for my friend to succeed. Right. And so just having to change the whole mindset from the city life, from the doggy dog, like, I'll just take whatever I want, to, oh, now I've got to give everything I have.
Right. So,
I really like that. I think it would be a really, you know, to get to a few people together, you know, kind of in a think tank to create a business where you can go out and even, you know, give lectures and seminars on, you know, community. One of the things that I crossed a lot too is I'm not a big nude person. You know, I just didn't grow up that way. And I understand that some people want to come to communities and they want to be naked. You know, I've done some permaculture places where after lunch everybody's naked. And for me, it was like a really uncomfortable situation. But, you know, there's so many things about communities that need to be discussed, you know, in the community with the people involved. Because, like, say, for example, this community, everybody kind of wants to be naked, and you got a couple people that really don't want to have a lot of nudity, then they're really not going to fit into that community, right?
Exactly. So, you know, and that just, I agree 100%. You know, that comes down to being with the like-minded people in the sense of that, yeah, you all have the same morals, or not necessarily exactly the same, but to where you can respect towards each other's space, and you know, you're honest with yourself, and you know, hey, honestly, I don't care for immunity, so this isn't my community. I'm out of here.
Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, like, if you involve, I think having some kind of group that goes out and gives seminars and lectures, and also can be the people who do, not, I think broker is a wrong term, but be the bridge in the communication. Like, okay, well, we have, you know, 20 people here, 10 couples, and then sit down and really do the math. Like, you know, how do you feel about your spiritual stuff? How do you feel about economic stuff? How do you feel before that they actually, you know, become like a community so they can decide whether that one's going to work for them or not? Or if there are adjustments that can be made within the community to house them all so that they don't, at one point, one person goes, okay, I can't take anymore and I'm out of here.
Well, and I agree, and this is where you really need to have some communication skills and be willing. We all need to be willing to look at ourselves and grow and address our ego, you know, thought concepts or whatever. Anyway, you know, just quickly, I want to mention this idea about the model, putting together a model. I've got that on my website, snowbirdhomesandland.com. And if you go to Greenhouse Community on the navigation bar, you'll come to a page and says Model Agricultural Conservation Vision for Greenhouse Community. And actually, I gleaned most of this. In fact, I might have gleaned all of it from a website, it's on there, and it's this whole concept, creating this model, and then the people in this community go out and use it as an actual affordable housing business and create the same type of situation for another group of people. And now all of a sudden we have self-reliant means of income to promote a network of affordable rural housing and agricultural communities throughout the country.
All right. I'm still here. I'll definitely check that out. So just a couple minutes left. So is there anything, one of the things that I always get, a lot of clients come into my office and people call me and email me, and, you know, the number one thing is everybody's really stressed. And I keep telling them, you know, like, as we shift, you know, that the economic markets will shift into something else. I mean, they're always going to, I mean, think about how many, you know, countries like Rome and all these other places that eventually, you know, had currency collapse, had whole system collapses, and eventually, you know, it changed into something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
So is there anything that you've come across about, like, new paradigm, new world economics, something that, like, you know, a person that is spiritual could, you know, use or think about or go to and look it up to help with stress or to help with making the economic changes?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you're asking there. Is it on a personal level? But I've had some people on the show. We had a whole economic show, and we talked everything from barter dollars to conscious currency, and where communities are actually go into, I forget what they call them, but anyway, it's everything's on the computer. If you give somebody a massage, it's valued. At, you know, everything's got the same value. You just put in your hours, not if you need a plumber. And so there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on, trade and whatnot. But to me, the most beautiful thing that I've ever read or am aware of is just what true conscious economy is, and conscious money. And that is like what we talked about earlier, where your value, even though you don't have any money, your value is knowing how to start, you know, do a garden, for instance. And somebody else's value is might be how to raise pigs. and all of that merges together. It's all the same value, and you're just trading off without, or for instance, getting to a point where a friend of mine needs to have a door in down the street. I go and put in their door, and that's it. It's just out of helping, you know, out of doing something for somebody else. And somewhere else down the line, you get this return comes to you. Somebody else comes over and says, oh, you need help with fixing the muffler on your car. Here, I can do that. Just, yeah. And
yeah.
Really, I mean, that is the ultimate. That's idealism, but it could work, especially in a small, you know, small community. I mean, and we might be forced to go back to that if all the economies do collapse, or if somebody's in another country where the economy doesn't totally collapse.
Yeah.
And right now, you know, our economies and everything is so global and whatnot. It just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And so where are these economies going to go? I mean, all we're doing is supporting one economy to the other. You know, but now we got to support Greece or Spain or whatever.
Yeah, well, I don't even think it's like supporting an economy. I mean, it's not even a real economy. It's based
on
currency, and paper money's never worked in the history. Never.
Right.
Because it's never been fair for all. It's been fair for some, not for all. But I've had people come to me that want to start a community, like biodynamic farming and stuff, like in Uruguay. So I've considered that. But I also have this like inner thing in me where, you know what? I'm not running. I'm not running. And I'm looking for people who I could call my family, my new family, you know. And I'm looking to live in a place where, you know, if I want to ski the backcountry, I can. If I want to kayak a river that day, I can. And I want to make a difference where I'm at, you know, where I stand. Because I feel like all these people that run with their money outside of the country, it's fake money anyway. You could actually put that money into our economy now, help people like me and you build these things, help put them together and contribute to the money that you've taken from us or the fake money you've taken from us and actually help change the paradigm, you know, where we all start from where we're at and we all start building it now so there isn't a lot of carnage and suffering.
Or we open up. We open up to each other. And sure, somebody might have something that somebody else doesn't, but we all have the same flame for what you just described. So now, okay, I'm willing to share what I've got and already in place. And if you come on board, then fantastic. And then we learn, you know, so that you don't have, rather than trying to go out, form a foundation, and get money from somebody else to go do this. You know, here, go do this. Create this model. Create this agricultural conservation model for affordable housing. Okay, thank you very much. And I take the money and create this thing with four or five other people. Well, what if there's somebody that already has, you know, a piece of 10 acres on a farm or something, and oh, you know what? I can open this up to four or five people, and they can create their housing out there and be part of that section of the land that I own out there, and we can all interrelate and work towards the land or whatever. You know, so, I don't know.
Right. And maybe even might save a farm that, you know, they're foreclosing on. You bring other people on, and they help build it up, and now your sales go higher. And you get an actual day off as that farmer now.
It's interesting, but basically we have to divorce ourselves from this whole value thing. That here, I got, you know, because I got $100,000, I own this mansion, or I own this land, I'm safe. I'm secure, you know, while the other people are floundering out there. And, you know, how do we merge everybody together? So, I mean, this isn't political or anything, but I like the statement that Obama makes about leveling the playing field. You know, I don't really think he's talking about total socialism or whatever, somebody gets their feathers ruffled on that. But I just love that statement because, let's level everything off and create this atmosphere where we're always have a value to each other, whatever that may be. That's really the shift in consciousness, the shift in lifestyle change.
Yeah, I think so. I'm getting my 2-minute call, so I'm going to let you go. But the other thing, too, I want to say is, like, I don't think that we can really rely on our government anymore or our cities to do the right thing, you know, even though we're paying them taxes. I think we're at a point where we have to start manning our own shovels and making decisions that are appropriate for our own community.
And that comes back again to our consciousness. Why do we want to give up our power to ask approval for somebody else to take care of us? What did we just do? We gave away our power.
Yeah, it's true. I don't want to have to write the government. I don't want to have to write Obama a letter to see if I can grow corn on my land.
No, it comes right down to the basics, you know. You know, you got a mate or something like that. Oh, let's see here. Can I go play golf? What'd you just do? You just gave up your choice.
Yeah.
So if we give each other choices, then we don't have to ask for approval or feel like we need to ask approval.
Yeah, and teach other people that they can do that too.
Yeah, we can do that, then we're self-empowered and we don't need to be governed.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm with you all the way. Well, James, I'm going to let you go. Thanks so much for being on my show. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. All right. Oh, boy, we really talked a lot.
That's my favorite thing to do, no.
Okay, good deal.
All right, have a great weekend. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.